Okay. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming this morning. I have this close of speaking usually at least once a year to Kol Yom Rishon, Mechol Yom Rishon, and it's always a great source of chizik to me to come and to share Torah with such an illustrious group of people who are so well-learned themselves. And I want to thank in absentia Nasan, who's here every morning, or Sunday morning, leaving his family, and Rabbi Arya Charko organizes the Kol Yom Rishon. Rabbi Charko, about a month ago, asked me to give the Kol Yom Rishon on this lot, Sunday morning, before Parshas B'Shalach, and he asked that I speak about a somewhat, I guess, contemporary topic. So I sent him a list of seven different options, either based on the Parsha or based on other things I thought people would be interested in. And I sort of threw in the last one, you know, Shiras Miriam, where she sang by the sea, Batigach Miriam, Hanavia, Achos Aaron. And then the questions that people asked about the issues of Kol Isha. And by the way, just as a side note, it's always to some degree fascinating when we, I wouldn't say project, but it sort of asks almost contemporary questions about Kol Isha or other things, sort of back to what happened back in the time of the Midbar. I sort of threw that in as sort of a throw-in, and then he responded that, you know what, do that. Do the topic of Kol Isha. And then I realized afterwards, like, and then he sent it out already, then I realized, oh my goodness, what am I getting myself into, you know, so maybe it's too late to go back to the first six topics. So the truth is, you know, I Baruch Hashem, between the yeshiva here and my wonderful shul in Muncie, where Mr. Belsky is a key mispalel, and I often give many, many shiurim, Baruch Hashem, I never find myself really nervous. You know, after so many years, I guess 12, 13 years in the rabbinate, you're really not nervous anymore. But I find myself somewhat, I guess, hesitant and nervous this morning, so much so that I actually wrote down notes, which I usually don't do, so I'm looking down a little bit. What's that?
I've never seen
notes already. Now you know I'm nervous. You know. So I apologize for, I guess, any lack of flow because of that. The reality is the issue of Kol Isha is such a complicated issue, and we know obviously that in our era, in the past few generations, many leading famous rabbanim have written articles, have allowed for Kol Isha in different circumstances, have wrote articles to justify their practice, and at least in one major case that I'm sure people here are familiar with, Dr. Kirshner and others. So some of the major poskim, or one major posek, discussed this issue some 60, 70 years ago of ways of trying to, in certain ways, find kulas, find the leniencies to the law which is explicit in the Gemara about Kol Isha. And the reality is that, you know, I'm perfectly sensitive, both as a person, as a sensitive person, as a Rav of a shul, to the desire in certain ways to, if not amend, but to certainly be more lenient about the areas of Kol Isha. Let me just mention a few of those justifications, and I'm sure that it's obvious, those justifications. Now, number one, this is true in general, if there is a practice that many Jews are doing, and this is discussed in many places in the Aruch HaShulchan, so the postman often will say there's such a respect for Klal Yisrael that if this is what the Am is doing, you know, there must be a halachic justification behind it. I'm sure all of you can think of famous examples where the nation themselves were perhaps not fulfilling the Shulchan Aruch to the letter of the law, and the postman says, okay, it must be mutter. Right. You know, the response is not, you know, millions of people are doing something wrong. A very famous example, and by the way, I was going to ask, normally when I give these shiurim, I always try to encourage, you know, conversation, questions. Maybe in this case, maybe I'll speak first, and people have questions afterwards. Certainly feel free to bring them to me. But a famous example is the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer says in Yoredei, I believe, Kuf Ayin Tes, about why is it that if we have a Beferish Pasuk and a Ramban and maybe the Rambam and others about the mitzvah of the Chiyuv of moving to Eretz Yisrael, so what are we doing here? You know, we're people that usually fulfill mitzvot d'oraisa. So the Avnei Nezer gives like a very, very creative and a somewhat famous response. You know, what would be the justification, even though the Pasuk seems to say that we should be doing, making Aliyah, so why are we still here? That Avnei Nezer in and of itself is like a fascinating shiur that I'm sure has been given here before. So we always want to justify. We see people, you know, what percentage would you say of, I guess, the average modern Orthodox shul? I don't know what the average modern Orthodox shul is, but take shul X in community Y. You know, what percentage of that shul is makbid and kol Isha? I would imagine not most of them. So we're talking about hundreds and thousands of people who are shomer mitzvahs. There must be a justification for why that is. So that's one reason, one area of sensitivity of modern day rabbanim. Number two, that it's a great source of pride, and this is something clearly that Rav Hirsch was famous for, of us feeling that the Torah speaks to contemporary times. And not that the Torah changes, not that halacha changes, but that halacha addresses every generation, and that halacha is not a changing body, but it's a body clearly that expresses and connects to the times as well, and speaks to the times as well. And we don't want to feel that something that perhaps felt archaic from 1,000, 2,000 years ago, that a man is going to be, again, let's speak openly, you know, aroused by a woman, and maybe it's not true anymore, and we've changed, and we've evolved, and can we speak to modern times? And that, of course, is always attention. It's attention in areas like this that are certainly complicated. It's an area in tensions of even Gezeiras Derabanan. Yeah, I'll throw out an example of that tension, which is related, but somewhat different. You know, we know there's a famous sheet of Tosfos that appears in Maseches Beitza, Daf Lamed Vav Ben Aleph, recorded by the Ramah, that the Mishnah that says that you cannot clap or dance on Shabbos may not be relevant anymore because we're not concerned about the Gezeirah of maybe Shem Yisakin Klishir. We're not going to fix an instrument if you clap. So Tosfos says, and this is brought down as a sheet in the Ramah, that we'd be more makel. Oh, thank you. There'll be more makel as a result of that. What's another famous example? And by many people disagree with Tosfos, the issue of medicine on Shabbos. They're going to go ahead and grind medicines. So we're not totally makel. We haven't thrown out the prohibition of taking medicines on Shabbos. But certainly we're much more makel of taking medicines because we're not really concerned about those gezeiros. So every single person here in this room would say, wait, Rabbi Blas, so how does that work with the Gemara in Beitza that says that we need, right, a minyan acher lahatiro, a greater basin to change that? How does that work with Yantav Sheni Shogolius, where the Gezeira still applies Bizmanenu? Where are areas that perhaps we do change? Where are areas that we don't change? And those are really the tensions of being people living in the modern era. That's a tension that is felt by I live in Muncie, so I'll use a Muncie reference, by a Jew living in New Square. It's certainly a tension by a Jew living in Teaneck, or a Jew living in Woodmere, that we already feel that we have sort of feet in both worlds, and that's, of course, not a concern, but it's a constant sort of challenge of how we're modifying, how we're acclimating, and it's, of course, not something new to you that I'm sure you live with yourself. The third area of concern is really the greatest area of concern, and that's the area which is discussed by the Sri Aish, which we'll speak about more in depth in about half an hour from now, and that is the issue of, which is a real issue, of not trying to alienate people, not trying to lose people. If we come out as a Rav or as a Mashgiach, I'm not sure if there's still Mashgichim in yeshivas now who come like pounding on desks and breaking shtenders. I'm sure like many of you when you went to yeshiva, you know, that was the image of the Mashgiach. You know, something was being broken, someone was going to get him. You know, like nowadays, that's probably not the model anymore. And that's probably for the best. But if the Rav of the shul comes up, And there's like a hard line in every issue, issues that very much affect kids, bismanenu, teenagers, bismanenu, people, bismanenu, and we say, ah, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, that's us, midiraisa. And it's just not the language that we draw people towards Yadus, specifically, let's say, girls who are teenagers in camp settings, but maybe even a more general sense. You know, I have amazing balabatim in my shul, who are not makban kolisha, the woman doesn't cover her hair, the woman wears pants. You know, the Rav doesn't want the balabatim to feel that they're inadequate. They come to shul, they send their kids to yeshiva, they do this, they're amazing people, they give chesed. You know, a person wants to create an environment of inclusivity, of connection, of warmth, of drawing, and therefore, not to say that person plays fast and loose with halacha, but you can see sort of the natiya, you can see the bias of trying to, in certain ways, at least share a different perspective why certain things might be makel, and of course that's the tension. Now the tension exists, of course, on the other side as well, and I'll conclude with this lengthy hakdam in a second. You know, Rabbi Mori Rivrilig, who I have the unfortunate chore of following afterwards, the key with these shiurim is always to give the first shiur. You don't want to be the person who follows, you know, somebody else. I don't think he'd mind me saying this. You know, Rabbi Mori is very strict when it comes to certain things. These areas, very strict about. If he would allow me to, and I'm not going to share them, he's told me in person 30 different kulos of areas that make your head spin, about areas that you would never think a person of a stature would make go. But yet he would get, Rabbi Willig and Rav Schechter and others, you know, branded as right-wingers because they wouldn't allow for X, or they're not bending when it comes to Y. That becomes a tension also, where the people sort of coming from a quote-unquote hardline perspective, the yeshiva perspective, the not-changing perspective, they become viewed in a way as sort of right-wingers, and therefore their voice becomes less meaningful in the public arena, in the public debate, and that's a shame. The fact that Rav Schechter is a person who is so moderate and so gentle and so sensitive that he's then branded as a right-winger, where he's far to the left of any Rosh Yeshiva of, you know, classical yeshiva, so Rav Schechter no longer has a voice often in many modern communities, that becomes a real issue, and I might say sort of a chisaron a little bit in communities that instead of having some, I guess, emunas chachamim or emunas chachamim, already will sort of paint people, he's not in our world, he's in a different world. So these issues obviously are very, very complicated. I want to do something that I normally would not do, or there's nothing, I would say, worse. Well, there are things worse, but it's never logical to give a shiur by beginning with 20th century shilas. You know, you give like a halacha shir and you start with a question that was raised 30 years ago. That's not the way to present the shir. You start with the pasuk, the gemara, the rishonim, the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch. In this specific case, I want to just throw out five or six specific shilos that have been asked and addressed by the poskim of this generation and last generation. And then we'll sort of like work our way backwards to sort of where some of the confusion, where some of the controversy stems from. Let's throw out even five, six questions. Question number one, again, I referenced this before, not that it's a modern shaila, but certainly something that the modern day Svarim are sensitive to, of how can we say there's a law called Kol Isha when we have at least one case in Tanakh where it's beferish that there was Kol Isha. We know that Devorah sang her Shira with Barak. If you say Miriam, okay, Miriam with the women, they were somewhere like, you know, behind the shed, they were, you know, behind like the, you know, the ironclad Mechitza, again, referencing back to Muncie. If you ever go to like one of these real Hasidish places, the Mechitza, you know, you can, you know, you it's like a 12-foot, it's like the Berlin Wall. So you can say Miriam and the women, they were sort of behind the Berlin Wall, but there's no getting around it when it comes to Devorah, when it comes to Barak. So what would be the sort of the heter in that case? So there's all sorts of a variety of answers given. Either that was Mipiadibor, she was commanded to do so. Maybe there's other answers given. Okay, but that's sort of one question which is asked by Devorah, and we'll mention later on in the Tshuva of the Sfirei Yesh of how he sort of deals with that question in a way that perhaps is more fundamental. It's question number one. Question number two, and of this, of course, this question always affects, always applies to Shilohs in any area, is this Isser of Kol Isha, which clearly was an Isser, that there's no question about. It's not a Midas Chasidus, it's not a Chumrah, it's not, you know, clearly, whatever you say Kol Isha was, it's an explicit Isser, which is mentioned in the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, and all of the Poskim. Is that an Isser Daraisa or an Isser Darabanan? What would be the pasuk that would tell us that's an Isser Daraisa? What pasuk in the Torah could possibly tell us that Kol Isha is an Isser Daraisa? And for all of you who I can see sort of like the wheels churning, thinking in your head where the pasuk is, the answer is, of course, that there's no pasuk, right? There's no pasuk from the Torah that tells us that there's an Isser Daraisa, and even the pasuk mentioning Mar Brachos is clearly on its machta. So what would be the reason to say that Kol Isha is an Isser Daraisa? Because we know there's such a thing called a gzera d'oraisa. Gzera d'oraisa means that the Torah itself makes a gzera. It's sort of like a unique din. The Torah itself tells you, don't do A because you might come to B. Rav Yosef Engel, in one of his svarim, in Lekach Tov, he brings down 9 or 10 different cases where the Torah makes a gzera d'oraisa. So one classic example would be Bayirah Bayimotze. Do not have chametz according to the Torah, because you may come to eat chametz. That's what we call gzera d'oraisa. Another gzera d'oraisa, beferish in the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, is the Isser Negiyah, right? To have a Negiyah between a man and a woman in a way that is intimate, right? Even though there's nothing beyond that, that also is a gzeira d'oraisa. Tosa says this, the Rambam says this, and others as well. Yichud may be a d'oraisa for the same reason. And perhaps you would say this is a gzeira d'oraisa, and in fact, that is the position that's espoused by Rabbeinu Yonan on the Shari Tshuva. This is a gzeira d'oraisa. On the other hand, the Rambam, and it's interesting because the Rambam is the one who espoused the idea of Gezer D'Oraisa when it comes to Negiya. The Rambam seems like it's explicit that Kol Ish is only D'Rabbanan. He says it's only Makas Mardus. Makas Mardus doesn't sound so good, but it's only Makas Mardus as opposed to other things. Therefore, the Rambam and most Rishonim seem to say it's only D'Rabbanan. And in fact, that's where the Rav Avadji Yosef and other people paskin that Kol Ish is an Isser. I shouldn't say it's only an Isser D'Rabbanan, but it's an Isser D'Rabbanan as opposed to an Isser D'Oraisa. Okay, that's issue number two. Number three, which obviously is relevant in a contemporary setting, in a camp setting, in other settings, is what age are we speaking about? And this question of what age girl are we referring to really gets into larger questions about the nature of the Isser itself, about why is it Isser, which we'll discuss in a few minutes. And based on that, the question of what age is allowed. Now, according to many Rishonim say that here a Penuya thing. Who's a Penuya? A Penuya is a non-married woman. She's not an Ashes Ish. To hear Penuya sing is mutter. The caveat of the pre-Megadim, and this is quoted by the Mishneh Brura and others, is that, okay, very, very nice. It's okay that a Penuya sings, but the assumption is that every single Penuya bizmanenu is a girl who's in Nida. And therefore, when the Rishonim had said that a Penuya, you can hear a single woman sing, and then you think to yourself, it's mutter to hear a 17-year-old woman, a 20-year-old woman sing, that's only about a woman who's not in Nida. But Bizmanena, we assume that all women past a certain age are in Nida, and therefore it's limited. Rav Moshe felt that the age in question is 11. That before 11, it's okay. After 11, it's not okay. We're off the makel like Rav Moshe, although many poskim say that that's necessarily not ideal, but certainly that kula does exist of up to age 11. Issue number four, and then maybe we'll take a break for a second, see if anyone has questions. Issue number four is the issue of husband and wife. When a woman's in Nida, and we know that for a man to be intimate with his wife and vice versa, when she's in Nida, is an Isser Kares, does the Isser of Kol Isha apply in that case? I don't mean to make this a mockery, but often I'll learn chassan classes with young men, and we'll get to this issue. And the man will say, I'm sorry, he said, well, supposing my kala has an awful voice anyway, it's not an issue, she doesn't enjoy singing Zemiros. In other cases, obviously, that's not the case, you know, and such an experience of singing Zemiros together, and the wife often has a beautiful voice. So the Pisrei Tshuva and Simin Kuf Tzadi Vav has the suffix. Rav Moshe seems to pan l'chumra. Many other poskim say l'kula. It's not an issue. We should be mako, according Rav Avadji Yosef. Again, more Rabbi Willig, who's always sensitive to sort of shalom bias issues and dynamic issues in a family. He said that even though normally we would hold like Rav Moshe, he says he would recommend, not to say it's allowed, but recommend people to be mako like Rav Avadji Yosef. Lastly, and perhaps the most pertinent issue, or certainly pertinent issue, is the issue about in what form does the Isser of Kol Isha represent itself, apply itself. Obviously, simply, you hear a woman singing, you're in her presence, you go to opera, you're wherever you are, you hear a woman singing, that clearly would seem at least, according to the Pashup Shah, to be an issue of Kol Isha. The question would be recordings. Am I allowed to plop on a CD of a Barbra Streisand? Somebody. Allowed to put in a CD. Whatever. People don't use CDs anymore. You understand when I say CD. My kids, I say CD. They're not exactly sure what language MP3. I'm referring to. Yeah. There's like a disconnect because, you know, my kids only know MP3. I don't know how to use an MP3. So it's like the meeting like of a crosshairs of different generations. I'm sure that all of you have been in the same boat and you know exactly of what I speak. So are you allowed to pop in Barbra Streisand, you know, good Jewish girl, and your MP3 player? So there's a wide debate on this issue. The Tzitz Eliezer, I believe, is recorded in these kids. I should apologize. I was late in giving the Maor Mekomos, so I gave in this list sort of by heart. So a couple, maybe a little bit off. But Tzitz Eliezer, I think we have the tshuva right, says it's not a problem. There's absolutely no prohibition of listening to a woman over a tape, over a CD. And he felt two reasons. First of all, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that you only desire that which your eyes can see. You're only mamshich towards that which you see in front of you. That would not apply to hearing, you know, Barbara Streisand or anybody else, because you're not going to be mamshich towards that. And secondly, the Tzitz Eliezer has a svara, which to some degree makes sense. He says, is this even a person's voice? If a person has a recording, and I mean, this gets a little bit to Rabbi Willing's previous issues as far as Shabbos issues. In other words, is a recording over a microphone in a studio even the person's voice? It's just a facsimile of a person's voice, and therefore that's not kol isha. The Tzitz Eliezer says, if I can't be yotzei havdalah with a recording, I can't be yotzei megillah of a recording, I can't be yotzei also, or I'm not going to violate the isser of kol isha. That's the opinion of the Tzitz Eliezer, completely sort of lakula. Tzitz Eliezer, of course, was the great post-it in Yerushalayim, Eliezer Wallenberg. On the opposite end is the Chelkas Yaakov. The Chelkas Yaakov says it's Aser, and he goes through the reasons why the Kulas and Tzitz Eliezer don't apply. That's on the other side. And in the middle, again, is as he often is, the Rav Adi Yosef, where he has a real compromised position. He feels that if you know the woman, if you've seen the woman before, and you can develop a mental image of the person, perhaps you're attracted to the person, then hearing their voice and recording is a problem. You're sort of mamshich after that voice. If not, so then it is mutter. I'll say, even as a comical aside, my children, as most of your children or grandchildren, became obsessed with this movie Frozen last year. I'm sure all of you, like, so there's a song in Frozen that if they would, you know, and there's a famous song there, and they kept on saying, no, you have to hear the song, and you have to see the person sing it. I said, I'll hear the song, but don't show me a picture of this person. And they kept on, I said, I'll hear the song, but don't ruin it for me by trying to show me a picture of this woman who sang the song. Again, and I think that's sort of like a contemporary approach, Rav Adi Yosef. You want to hear a woman's voice, but once you know what they look like, you've seen a picture of them, etc., etc., that would be a problem. And again, that is the middle position of Rav Adi Yosef.
I think it was a cartoon woman.
What's that?
I think it was a cartoon
woman. A real cartoon? Right. Yeah. Well, that's one approach. That's like, you know, just put your head in the sand and then, okay. Anyway, whoever that cartoon woman is, she's now a multi-millionaire. So I don't know where the money, is going to. Anyway, so again, I mentioned five different issues. The issue of Dvar Miriam, the Raisa, the Rabbanon, what age girl, husband and wife, recordings, the Tzitz Eliezer, the Chelkas Yaakov, and Rav Adi Yosef. Anybody have this up until now, either a question or aura that we can maybe spend 1 minute on? Everything good?
About microphones.
Right.
If you go to a Broadway show, you're not hearing the voice, you're hearing a microphone.
Right, but the problem with that would be that the Tzitz Eliezer seems like he needs both of those elements to be makel. Either A, you don't see the person, and B, that it's not real. If you're at a Broadway show and you see the person there, even though the microphone may make it a facsimile of the voice, that sort of knocks out the first reason to be makel, and therefore Tzitz Eliezer would not say that. Please, in the back, yeah.
I think that there is a clue for a person who is deceased.
It would make sense based on that svara. Rav Adi Yosef actually says in the tshuva, I don't know if it's here, but if you want to see the Rav Adi Yosef, it's in Yabia Omer, a Chelik Aleph, and the tshuva's tshuva vav. He says, again, it may be surprising that even the person is deceased, but you know what they look like, there still is some type of capturing of the imagination, so to speak. But again, your svara wouldn't make sense based on that Rav Adi Yosef. Please, in the back. Yeah.
Is there a difference between whether it's secular or religious?
Well, there might be, and I want to, maybe we'll get to that in 1 second. Okay, please, in the middle.
Kol isha apply to more than just singing?
Right. Okay, hold on to that also. Okay, great. Anyway, please.
It's more philosophical. We say every day, Kol Neshama, Hallelujah, Hallelujah.
Right.
It's part of the symphony of creation, is my first question. That God would create this wonderful gift that we should be able to enjoy.
Right, so that's such a beautiful, beautiful, that is truly a beautiful perspective. The perspective for those who didn't hear or people on tape, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the beauty of a woman's voice, and we feel that, especially based on Rav Hirsch's idea of nature and seeing nature, that everything that's beautifully created should be appreciated, who are we to say we can't appreciate? So we're not saying that a woman's voice can't be appreciated, or a woman's beauty can't be appreciated, but life is all about Kedusha, making Gedarim where something applies, where something is allowed. So only to have, and one of the highlights, my daughter's Michala this year, they just have this singing performance, thousands of girls come out where you get to sort of showcase your talents and appreciate it. But we're all about in life making sort of designations where things apply, as opposed to saying it's like a, you know, sort of like a free-for-all. But I'm definitely sensitive to your point. Maybe just two more. Rabbi Hoffman, you want to say something?
Well,
Okay, please.
Again, multiplicity, several women at the same time.
Right, that would sell. Yeah.
And a man and a woman like Dvorah and Baruch.
Right. Okay, so we're going to get to that issue in a second, or not in a second, in the same tshuva that Tzitzit Eliezer, and just hold off on that for a second. Please, in the back. What's that? I wouldn't see a difference between a voice on the radio versus the tape.
Quality.
Oh, what's that? What's that? That's asked also, that same question. But you know, and let's this, but very quickly, this, yeah. Okay. Right, okay, we're gonna get to in 1 second.
Okay.
Okay, so just hold off. Can we hold off and then we'll ask that later? Do you mind?
I want to explain why it's.
Okay, so hold on 1 second. Okay, fine. So that really leads us, and again, sort of all those contemporary issues, and obviously there are other issues which I purposely did not address now, but they were asked by the gentleman in front of me, namely, would this apply to a multiplicity of girls singing? Would this apply to boys and girls singing together? B'nai Akiva, NCSY, you can throw in whatever, you know, youth movement you were involved in your days also. So how do we sort of approach all of those types of issues? And we will get to that. The real issue, and I hope that it was photocopied, is really the famous Gemara. And before we get to the famous Gemara, which is source number one, we'll mention two other Gemaras also. One Gemara appears in Kedushin Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, towards the bottom, a conversation between Rav Nosson and Rav Yosef, where there was a certain tension between the two of them. Rav Nosson asked Rav Yosef, can you please go extend greetings to my wife Yalta? And already Rav Yosef was not a big fan of Rav Nosson in this specific case. And Rav Yosef responds back, no, that's called, right, that's considered to be Kol Isha, because the woman is Erva. Now, it's very important to note in that case, in that Gemara, and it's hard to know what to make of a Gemara like that. Is that a Gemara lahalacha? Is not a Gemara lahalacha? That there was no singing involved. This was a warm interaction between a man and a woman, and Rav Yosef did not want to hear the voice of Rav Nosson's wife. But again, that's one place where we say that the voice of a woman is called an erva. Now, how you define the word erva? You know, usually people, when they want to write a statement like that, they'll just write the word erva in English. You know, just sort of like gets around trying to define exactly what erva means. Erva means something that is probably sexually stimulating, sexually provocative, and therefore we see already in that Gemara that just even sort of a discussion with a woman in an intimate way, in a maybe even a casual way, that might fall under the rubric of Kol Isha, and that the woman's voice is erva. That's Gemara number one. Gemara number two, as we often have, the last few dafim in Maseches Sota are often some of the most like sort of exciting dafim in all of Shas. The Mishnah says in Sota, on daf Memches, I believe on the Beis, the Mishnah says when men and women sing together, that's called pritzos, and the Gemara goes on to even give even harsher terms as well. And that is again a case of men and women sing together, and that's in the context of Chorban Abayis, and ways of remembering the Bayis. Now, all of that leads us to the Gemara and Brachos and Daf Chavdal and Aleph. And again, I'll ask the people reserve any comments or questions to the end. So, Omer Rebbe Yitzchak, this is the first Mar Makom. So, Tefach Ve'isha Erva. So, we know that even a Tefach of a woman's body is Erva, right? Lamai, Elam Listakulei Ba, if the issue is as far as looking at her, right? So the Halmer of Sheishes, Lamanichtav, etc. We'll skip to the key part. Ela beishto, right? It means that, and this is the Vilakriyashma. It means that, in general, there is an idea that you can't look at any woman. You can't look at any woman listakulule. What does that mean? Mistakel. What's mistakel mean? To stare at, and the Rambam says this explicitly, to stare at in a way that there is some type of hana that you're getting, perhaps staring at the person longingly, trying to get hana from the person. It doesn't mean that you can't sort of glimpse a person, but it means to be mistakel of the person. That is usur to any woman. A man cannot be mistakel to a woman, even a tefach, even any part of the woman, and that's obviously a discussion in halacha. So what does it mean in this Gemara, and obviously the location is critical, the third parak Maseches Brachos of tefach be'isha erva, it means be'ishro, even a person's wife, vilkriyishma. By Kriyat Shema, we have the elevated standards, we have the heightened standards, that we want to have such like a level of concentration that you should not be mistakel by your wife when it comes to Kriyat Shema. Okay? Fine. So Amar V'chista, so Shok Ba'isha Erva, what Shok is? If you're aware of sort of modern day halachic machlokasim, there's a debate what exactly is shok, and this has led to, I guess, hundreds of years of rabbinic debate. Is this something that is below the knee? Is this above the knee? Okay, that's again a shir in and of itself. Shedemar, etc., etc. Okay, skipping down a few lines. Amr Shmuel, this third line from the bottom, Kol Be'isha Erva. Right? Shenemar, Kikolach Ariv, Amarach Noveb. If you'll be asking before, well, here is a pasuk, obviously it's a pasuk from Shir Shirim, and that's not going to be Mechayev, and this is the Raisam of Sheshes, right? The Ser Be'isha Erva, Shenemar, etc., etc. So we have these cases. Now, if I ask you, and I'm only asking you hypothetically, how would a person relate to this Gemara, putting it in tandem with the Gemara in Kedushin that says Kol Be'isha Erva in conversation, putting it in tandem with a Gemara in Sota? How do you understand the Gemaras here, that by Kriyat Shema we say Kol Be'isha Erva, that a woman's voice is sexually stimulating? So what do you think about that for a second? How would a Rishon relate to this issue? So there's three different perspectives that are brought down in the Rishonim. The perspective A, and we're going to get to this in a second, because this has been where the tremendous debate has come from, is the perspective of what we would call the Ashkenazi Rishonim, maybe not necessarily including the Balei Tosfos. Who are those? The Rav Yah, the Yerayim, the Or Hazaruah, and others. That they prescribe this halacha of Kol Be'isha Erva. They say this is a din in Kriyat Shema. That Kol Be'isha Erva means, in the context of Kriyat Shema, hearing a woman's voice is sexually stimulating, and therefore, one should not say Kriyat Shema in the context of a woman's call. Now, I want you to process that shita, think about that shita, that in the context of Kriyat Shema, the call is erva. That's shita number one. Shita number two is the shita, what appears to be, of the Rambam. The Rambam is quoted here. The Rambam is in Isurei Bia, Perek Chaf Aleph, Halacha Aleph and Beis. Now, all of you are experienced in learning. What is that Rambam placing it in Isurei Bia, the significance of that? The Rambam does not place his halacha in Hilchos Krishma, in Hilchos Tefillah, in Hilchos Megillah. The Rambam places this in the halachos of Isurei Bia, namely the prohibitions between men and women. And the Rambam says that you cannot listen to a woman's kol. The Rambam says in Sefer HaMitzvos and other places that that can lead a person towards chait. It's something that draws a person towards chait, and therefore a person cannot listen to the woman's call. It's not a din in Kriyat Shema. The Rambam doesn't say it's by Kriyat Shema. The Rambam only says this when it comes to Isurei Bia. Now, a question could be asked. If we know that according to the Rambam, you can't hear a woman's voice, and for the Rambam, that may be, to address the question, a singing voice or a speaking voice. So why is it not by Hilchos Kriyat Shema? Why does the Rambam leave this off in Kriyat Shema, where it would seem to be relevant, right? That you can't hear a woman's voice during Kriyat Shema. Why does Rambam not say that? And again, that's something that is discussed. But maybe again, for the Rambam, it's obvious that is not allowed as well during Kriyat Shema. And there might be one other nekuda as well. For those people who say, I don't want to get too detailed, I'm going to try to keep this as sort of as general as possible, that this is a din in Kriyat Shema per se, the way that those Rishonim will learn the Gemara is le'ikuva. Namely, it's a specific din in Kriyat Shema that if you were to hear a woman's voice during Kriyat Shema, according to some Rishonim during Lima Torah, you're not yotze the mitzvah, you have to do it again. Where for the Rambam, there's no specific din li'ikuv by Kriyat Shema. He just has a general category called kol isha that would apply during Kriyat Shema and not during my Kriyat Shema, and that cause it would lead a person towards chait. There's a third category, and again, please hold your questions for a second, and that's the category that seems to be of the Rosh. The Rosh is photocopied here. Seems to be of the Meiri, of the Ravid, and others. Namely, where they say that it's not just a din in Kriyat Shema, it's always a din. It's always there, but not only because of what the Rambam said, that the voice leads a person to chait, but that the voice itself is erva. And even if it's not going to lead to chait, even if it doesn't lead you to point B, but the voice itself, just like a woman's body is itself sexually stimulating, even if it leads to nothing, but the voice itself is erva, and therefore that's not appropriate during Kriya Shema, it's not appropriate during any other time as well. So those are three shitas. The Chachmei Ashkenaz, including Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, it seems like it's a din in Kriya Shema. The Rambam says it's always a din, and the Ravid, Meiri, and others who say that applies to all cases because the voice itself is erva. Now the way that's brought down l'halacha, and before we get to that, is in the Shulchan Aruch discusses this in Or Chaim. The Shulchan Aruch discusses this in Evan Ezer. The Magen Avraham, the Prima Gadim, the later Poskim, they all say that during Kriya Shema, not during Kriya Shema, Aser, because the voice itself is Erva. So as time went on, and this is definitely a true claim, it became more and more solidified that instead of saying that reason A or reason B or reason C, simply the voice is erva and it's usser at all times and all places, etc., etc. And the debate would be zemer or dibor, but we say, let's say, lalacha zemer. Now, the reason that this became a source of debate and a contemporary debate, I'm going to ask for a question in a second so no one gets lost along the way, is because there is a prominent rav or rabbi who's well known. I don't want to mention his name because I would never want to denigrate a person. If people want to ask afterwards, but they can find the article, I'm certainly happy to say that. Where when I read the position of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, including Rabbeinu Yonah and others, to me it seemed like what they were saying was that this applies even by Kriya Shema, or specifically by Kriya Shema. I mean, it applies everywhere. The voice itself is something that is erva or can lead to something inappropriate, but it also is something that has a sort of special significance when it comes to Kriya Shema. So this rabbi, who again is well known, who's a far bigger scholar both in learning and otherwise than I am, felt the way that he read the position of the Chachmei Ashkenaz was that it only applies to Kriya Shema. And therefore, if you were to rely on that perspective, which is the perspective of many Rishonim, then you could question, well, really, if we just read the Gemara based on our tradition of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, so we say that only applies to Kriya Shema, it doesn't necessarily apply to other cases, but it just happens as time went on, as often is the case, the halacha became codified more stringently, but perhaps there's an opportunity to go back and to sort of re-examine the sources to say whether or not that is appropriate. Now, the response to this article, and there's been many since then, including Rav Henke and other people, is that that reading of the Rishonim is wrong. It's not only Kriya Shema, it's that there's always an Isser, and that would seem to be the pashtus of this Gemara in Brachos as well, that Kol Isha Erva, and there's even a further application when it comes to Kriya Shema, that this is a din in Erva, and it's stringently applied by Kriya Shema, where a person needs more concentration. But that became the debate, and based on the article this person wrote, among other things as well, that became sort of adopted into camps. One famous camp in particular that I'm sure half of you have either gone to or your kids went to, schools, and that sort of became the sort of the new template a little bit for segments of the modern Orthodox community, that based on this article perhaps we can a little bit sort of like go back to the sugya and figure out what the sugya really means to say. That's issue number one. Now, before we get to issue number two, again, the hour is late. Anybody want to ask just a 1 minute question so we can just move on quickly afterwards? Anybody? Okay. Issue number two, we'll get to that afterwards, is the issue that perhaps is most relevant in that article. It's most confusing when it comes to reading halacha, and that's the following. I think this actually was not my fault. I'm willing to take blame for it. They quoted source number 6, Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim Siman Chaf Hei Sif Gimel. Leave it to modern technology. It's really, anybody know what Siman should be? Ayin Hei. So this Shulchan Aruch, I would say, is irrelevant, but it's irrelevant for this discussion. Now, the reason that it's complicated is the following. You really have to know the sugya well to know the issue, and I want to make three comments about the following Ramah, so I hope that all of you stay with me for these three following comments. Comment number one, before we have to sort of do the Ramah first. So if you look in Or HaChaim, Ayin Hei, Siman Gimel, Resif Gimel, says Yesh li zoher mishmias kol zemer isha b'shas krishma. He says we should even, the Shulchan Aruch says in Evin Ezer, there's always an Isser kol isha. The Shulchan Aruch says that unilaterally without any debate. But he says we should even be more zahir, more concerned during Krishma b'shas for Zemer Isha b'shas Krishma. Okay, now this Ramah is where the complications, the complexities come into play. Everyone with me? The Ramah says, I'm just going to read it out loud because it's not in front of you. Vafil b'ishto. Okay, so far the Ramah is not doing anything too controversial. Even your wife. Aval kol, listen to these words, haragilbo eino erva. But a voice that you are, how would you say, rugilbo? What's the best definition for that? A voice that you're used to, a voice that you're accustomed to, eino erva, is not sexually stimulating. Now this Ramah, you know, opens a Pandora's box to all sorts of complexities in Piskei Halacha, you know, all sorts of questions. Well, if you're rugil to it, and we are rugil, and therefore, like, ain't no erva, it's simply not erva. So I'll make three comments on this Ramah, and all three of these comments I believe to be accurate, but the third comment in particular, I think it's something that's a great source of confusion that has led to confusion in halacha. Comment number one, and this is just to be intellectually honest, the way that this Ramah is quoted in the Levush, maybe the Levush doesn't like the fact that the Ramah sounds so makel, or maybe that the Levush quotes the Ramah saying, kol dibor, if it's a speaking voice that you're used to, right? So, it's eino erva. It doesn't mean a kol zemer, but if there's a voice, normally we would say you're makbid even a kol dibor, according to the Rambam, right? But if it's a kol dibor shiragilbo, it's not erva, you could be makel. I asked a very, very well-known chashuv person who I greatly respect about the sort of discrepancy between this Ramah that says kol isha and the Ramah quoted in Levush that says kol dibor isha, and he said, no, that the Rishonim it's based on is only speaking about dibor, and therefore this heter is only by dibor, it's not by kol zemer. Respectfully, I disagree. If you look in the Beis Yosef, which I have quoted, this is a very common shita. It seems like any kol, even a kol zemer that you're ruggle bo, that we say it's not considered to be erva. Okay, so that's number one. And even if we read the Ramah in a lenient way, we would say kol zemer, or you could read the Ramah perhaps in a lean way, and many people do. That's point number one. That really it's kol zemer, not kol dibor. Point number two is, what does it mean when we say, maybe we'll get to this actually as point number three. Point number two is a different point, and this is an issue of great confusion. I'm sure that most of you here are familiar with a very, very famous Aruch HaShulchan. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan is famous for about 1,000 comments, but if you had to sort of make a top 10, you know, top 10 most famous Aruch HaShulchan comments, so the following comments certainly would go down in the annals of famous comments of the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan, and again, my mistake, he quoted Ayin Hei Sif Vav. It's really Ayin Hei Sif Zayin. As you get older, the memory starts to diminish a little bit. I'm sure you're laughing at that. You know, I'm not as young as perhaps I come off. But anyway, so the Aruch HaShulchan says in Ayin Hei Sif Zayin that we know based on this Gemara and Brachos that Seir Be'isha Erva. Namely, you cannot, that Seir is an Isser, a woman's hair is an Isser, you can't say Kriyishma in the context of this Gemara around the hair of a woman. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan, if I had more time, I would read it out loud, has this very famous piece where he says, "Bavonosenu harabim," in our days where we are integrated into the cultures of the world, etc., etc., he says, no longer does hair have that same type of allure, and therefore the Aruch HaShulchan says, it's not at all, or it's not really an Isser to say Krishma around a woman's hair. And that would be the heter as well, the Aruch HaShulchan, of saying brachos around women whose hair is not covered, krishma, because a woman's hair is not the way that it once was. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan had the opportunity to say that in Evin HaEzer, where the halachos are brought down about hair covering. He could have said also, but bizmaneinu, it doesn't apply. Avnoseinu harabim, a woman's hair, is not erva. But the Aruch HaShulchan does not mention it in Evin HaEzer, nor does the Ramah say this point by Kol Isha in Evin HaEzer. This point of the Aruch HaShulchan and of the Ramah is a din in Or Chaim, namely, the super din of being more Zahir by Krishma and not saying Krishma about uncovered hair voice does not apply Bizmanenu because we're more used to it. But that's not a heter. That's not a saying, okay, it's now completely mutter. It just means that as far as that super level of concentration or a super level of whatever it is by Krishma, that no longer applies. Now, this is a mistake. I believe it's a mistake, and I spoke to many people who agree with me, that again, you know, people say, well, why have this sort of the status of a woman's hair? Again, I'm chas v'shalom, not critical of anybody. Anybody who's here in this room, and you're learning Torah, your wife's learning Torah, like, Baruch Hashem, it's great. This is not a criticism, it's just trying to look at the halacha in an honest and open way. I'm not at all an arrogant or a judgmental person, but I think that there are probably many, many thousands of people, learned people, who say, this Aruch HaShulchan that says, I'm going to say no harabim, I mean, that's telling you this is totally mutter, but that Aruch HaShulchan clearly, if you look at inside, is only giving that heter when it comes to hair covering. There's another famous Mar Makom which I did quote, the Mordechai. The Mordechai says by Kol Isha, Baben Hussein HaRabim, in our days, if we were to be matbid on Kol Isha, we would never say Kriyishma. I don't know where the Mordechai, what he was doing. You know, we'd always be hearing, and we would never learn Torah. Again, I don't know where the Mordechai's base medrash was, where his house was. And therefore, in order to not be mevatel, the mitzvah of Krishma, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, therefore it is mutter, even though you hear Kol Isha. That Mordechai is not saying that it's mutter l'chachila. He's saying that that special din of Krishma and Lima Torah no longer applies bizmanenu. That's number two. Number three, and I say this from, I guess, experience of dealing with the world, and you and I live in the same world together, so I'm sure that what I say is not a shock to anybody. A person can make the argument that nowadays, based on the Ramah, this Ramah is really based on all the Ashkenazi Rishonim, so now we're Rugelbo. I mean, who here has not heard a woman's voice 1,000 times, 2,000 times? You hear women's voices, it's part of living in society, every person has a TV, they go to movies, they hear, I mean, that's... So no longer, perhaps, does a woman's voice have an allure. Now, if we were to say that, such a halacha, so perhaps you could do away with a lot of things. You know, all of the gzeros by nida. Okay, it's not an issue anymore. People are no longer so bestial that you need those harchakos. Perhaps they're not so concerned about mechitza in a way. That was in a time where people, but nowadays, it's sort of not the same issue. In other words, if you ask me, again, I'm not saying this from a Haredi perspective, but the time to feel more guarded and more protected is in our day, where the idea of Kol Isha is not that I'm going to go run off when I hear a woman's voice, and I don't mean to say this at all in a crude way, and attack the woman who's on stage, or attack the woman and jump on top. That's not what it means. It means that we're interested in creating communities of Kedusha, communities of separation, communities where people are somewhat guarded in a healthy way around the opposite sex, where there's more of an emphasis on the relationship between a man and his wife as opposed to a man and somebody else's wife, where a person is more conscious about issues of arayos and Kedusha. I think it's fair to say that's something that our society has lost, both outside the walls of the Beis Knesses and even inside the walls of Beis Knesses, the amount of frivolity and the amount of closeness in relationships that clearly have allowed not two people or five people, but thousands of people to cross over lines, clearly is something that, if anything, bizmanenu, we don't want to make a concession to that. We want to say, okay, fine, but we want to create a certain society in our lives where that's not acceptable. We're ruggable. Okay. And lastly, just make a comment in that same Ramah. I think that really suffices. So point number one of that Ramah is that I think objectively he's speaking about Kol Zemer, not Kol Dibor. Number two, he's speaking about one's wife, not another woman. Point number three, this is probably only a din in Or Chaim. It's not a din that in general it's mutter for a person to not cover the hair or to hear a woman's voice. And point number four, the fact that it's more ragil doesn't mean that that should be sort of an open door now that might allow for greater intimacy and greater familiarity, but perhaps we should go in the other direction. What would seem to be good part of my life. Anybody, anybody just want a quick comment on that? Any question? A very quick question. So the question is then, what would be the reason or the heter for what goes on? I grew up in NCSY, as I'm sure many of you grew up in your youth organizations or B'nai Akiva, and obviously everything that NCSY would do, Rabbi Stolper and others, was done kedasu, kedin. So what exactly is the heter for such a thing? So there, I recommend people reading the tshuva of the Sridei Yesh. I photocopied it inside. I'm sure most of you, or many of you, know a lot about the Sridei Yesh. The Sridei Yesh is probably one of the most fascinating personalities of the 20th century. You met him. He was a person just, and the excellent book written, I like most of what's written in the book by Mark Shapiro about his life. It's a fascinating, fascinating book. The Sridei Yesh was a person who lived in many different worlds. He lived in the world of the Lithuanian yeshivas, and he also lived in the world of Germany. He was the head of Hildesheimer, etc. And he was a person of unbelievable complexity, unbelievable breadth, unbelievable genius and insight. He was a poetic person. And despite his genius, his tshuvos read in a very, very beautiful and not difficult way. So I recommend taking this home. It's Tshuva Ches. And it's Tzitzel Ezer, the Sridei Yesh, I'm sorry, I apologize, it's Tzitzel Ezer. The Sridei Yesh starts on, it's hard to follow this, number 15. If you even look at the first paragraph, he speaks about the organizations under the banner of Yeshurun, right? Yeshurun, of course, was the in Germany, as far as the youth organizations that had been okayed in past generations by Rav Hirsch and by Rav Hildesheimer. And people asked, you know, how could such a thing be allowed? Presumably we're speaking about the time between the two world wars. And the Sridei Yesh says that people, Rabbanim, would come from Poland and from Lithuania and from Eastern Europe, and they would see what was going on in Germany and in France, they would fall off their chair. You know, imagine for a second, the Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, you know, shows up frish on the last night of Sharia. I mean, it was sort of, and that's neither a criticism of Rosh Yeshiva Lakewood or frish, but it just, you know, it's like 100 miles away, but it could be literally like two different planets. You know, what would be the reaction? So that was a little bit of the reaction of the Rabbanim in Eastern Europe when they caught a glimpse of what was going on in Western Europe. And he quotes an amazing line from Yisrael Salanter, which I'll get to in a second. And he says what the Rabbanim decided to do in Western Europe by allowing co-ed activities, by allowing intermingling, by allowing groups to get together for Shabbos and Miros, he says this is literally saving German Jewry and French Jewry. He says at the end of the tshuva, he says, if you know anything about the mentality of a modern woman, he says, you tell that person, don't sing, keep quiet. He says, all that's going to do is backfire. And he quotes, of course, the famous Gemara of Eis La'asot L'Hashem Afar Torasecha. There are times where you have to sort of be mechalel one din to allow for the kiyum of other dinim. And he says that the Eastern European Rabbanim, with all of their chumrakite, I don't know if that's a real word, you know, with all of their religious passion, with all their zealousness, he said they've been completely unsuccessful of keeping sort of the Jews who are wandering into the fold. You know, there was the approach of the Chasam Sofer of keeping everything sort of locked away, but it was not effective. By and large, the approach of the Lithuanian Eastern European Rabbana was not effective. He felt that Rav Hildesheimer and Rav Hirsch and Rav Boryer, etc., they had an insight into chinuch. He said, when Yisrael Salanter, when he came to somewhere in Germany, he said that I can't be more heter what Rav Hildesheimer did, but I wish I had his chelik in Olam Haba. That sort of like explains a little bit the situation. He says, that's the case though. We can't say something is totally makel if there's no heter. So where was the heter of Rav Hirsch? Where was the heter of Hildesheimer? So he suggests possibly number one, and this relates to this gentleman's question in the second row. He says, maybe because you have men and women singing together, therefore we have the famous principle of Trei Kol Elo Mishmoy that is not, you're not going to hear the woman's voice if you have women and men singing together. But he rejects that. He says that can't be the right answer. Now, he doesn't say why not. Why is that not a good heter of Trei Kol you don't hear? So probably for one of two reasons. Either because the Gemara itself says when the voice is chaviv to you, you do hear that voice. Or B, Because the Mishnah and Sota already said that boys and girls sing together are like pretzels, and therefore maybe he didn't want to say that that was the heter. So that was number one. But he says that perhaps what is the heter, and this would be like a real bam, a bam kula, is what's found in the Stei Chemed. The Stei Chemed says, of course, Stei Chemed is one of the great, great Sephardi Puskim who wrote an encyclopedia of halachic topics based on Aleph, Beis, Gimel. He'll tackle all the topics in Aleph and go to Beis, etc. He says that Kol Isha only applies, based on the Rambam, as we said before, to something that is going to be arousing. Something that's going to be sexual in nature. Something that involves histaklus, where you're going to get hana'a in a very type of physical way from that thing. He says, if what they're singing is zmiros, or if they're singing dirges, mekonenos, or other such things, that's not in the area that a person is going to be nigrar after, he's going to follow after. And therefore he says that that's not a problem, because that would be the heter to rely on, of women singing, because it's shiras v'shishbachos, zmiros, mekonenos, etc., things that are not at all an issue. Now, just to conclude, the Sefirot Yesh does say that the venue to do this in is the way they found in Yeshurin. What was it said like in Yeshurin, in the youth groups? You had the boys on one benches, the girls on different benches. They were apart from each other. They sang together. There was sort of an air of modesty around them. It was boys and girls together as opposed to one woman by herself. He said in that venue, then, okay, it's mutter, and it's encouraged, and we should do it. That's a way of keeping people involved. Now, there was a very, very well-known Rav, and I'll conclude in a second. Again, someone who's an amazing person, who's done tremendous amount for Klal Yisrael. So they have a woman singing at graduation. My brother-in-law went to the school. My brother-in-law is like a little bit of a kanai. What he was doing in the school, I'm not sure. And he asked the principal, he said, well, how are women singing? So he said, because the Sefirot Yesh, how is this girl singing a solo? So he whips up from his pocket. You know, he was ready, you know, with the underlined, highlighted of the parts of Sefirot Yesh that seems to imply, okay, this is great for, you know, a co-ed setting together, separate benches. He says, that may not necessarily be matir, you know, a whole realm of other areas that perhaps, you know, have been used in the name of the Sefirot Yesh. So you take him to tshuva. The tshuva is very, very encouraging of co-ed singing, youth groups, etc., because of the necessity of keeping people close. But again, I think it's probably a tshuva that has been, maybe has sort of like overstepped its original intent. I want to conclude, and then if people have a question, then we'll take this a minute of questions. We discussed again the issue of Kol Isha, which has its original launching point from the fact that Miriam sang and Devorah sang. Question, how could that be the case? There's a question whether or not Kol Isha is d'oraisa, d'rabbanan. We discussed the issue of what age can girls sing from. We discussed the issue of a woman who's a nida singing around her husband. And lastly, the issue about recordings. These questions all revolve around the reading of the Gemara in Brachos that says Kol B'Yisha Erva. Is that Erva meaning that it's only in Kriya Shema, the word Makbid? Is it Erva that you don't do it because it may lead to X, Y, and Z? Or is the voice objectively erva? The reason that perhaps there was confusion was based on this very, very chashu person who wrote an article that says that most Ashkenazi Rishonim only say it's din Kriya Shema. It's only the other Rishonim that say other things, but the halacha to some degree has been sort of corrupted over the period of time, being more machmir than it was originally intended. My point, and I think it's a valid point, is that that's not the reading of those Rishonim. Those Rishonim were saying there's an extra din by Kriya Shema, but not only by Kriya Shema. There's the Ramah that says in Urechayim Sibin Ayin Hey Sif Gimel, that says that a voice, Sheruggelbo, even a Kol Zemer, is mutter. That Ramah, again, could be interpreted as giving sort of this wide het there, the Ruggel to the voice. Number one, the Ramah seems to be saying this by a person's wife. Number two, it may only be a din of Kriya Shema, even if it is true. And lastly, the fact that something is ruggelbo does not mean that we should essentially allow for the furthering of sort of the breaking down of barriers in society. Lastly, we have the tshuva of the Sefirot Yesh, who quotes the opinion of Rav Hirsch from Hildesheimer. The reason that co-ed groups were mutter is because of Trei Kole. The Sefirot Yesh himself rejects that, and he bases it on the Stei Chemed about the issue of singing zmiros v'shishbachos together. All of us in our own lives should continue to grapple with these issues. But if I can say this before people go, the one thing I would request And I don't have to tell people in this audience, but I think it's only something that is worth mentioning. There are many people who are Erlichim people, people who are Makbid on Hilchos Shabbos in many areas. And when it comes to sort of an area like this, where it's to some degree sort of maybe impinging on a person's life, and it is impinging. I mean, I grew up going to musicals. I love musicals. I miss it. I wish I can go. You know, I can't hear Les Mis. I mean, it truly is an impingement to not allow for whole. So that's usually not an area that people simply are asking shailas about. And I think, I'm not saying this community versus that community. I think one area that sort of, I guess, the more yeshivish community that we can look to with a real sense of respect is the fact that there's like a certain kavod for the halachic process. This issue comes up, you go to the Rav, you look in the Shulchan Aruch, you ask a shayla, you feel meshubit to that to some degree. You know, whatever a person decides to do in their life, it should be well thought out, well researched, asked a question about. It's not just, we do this because we're modern people. That's not a sort of halachic response. And that should also come, again, not speaking to this group, but in general, with a real sense of like a mora, a real sense of an awe, and a real sense of respect, you know, for the Mesorah. When Chazal say, Kol B'Yishe Erva, and they understand that a woman's voice is actually stimulating, and then I get up and I say, no, it's not true anymore. I mean, who am I to get up and to sort of, with such like an arrogance, okay, things don't apply, and it's that rabbi is machmir, and he's crazy, and he's a right winger. I mean, there has to be a certain sense of a covenant for the Mesorah, and an awe for the Mesorah, and an awe for this process. And I think ultimately, whatever a person decides to do in their life, and hopefully we keep the Shulchan Aruch as stringently as possible, we should always be well-educated Jews who simply are trying to do the Dvar Hashem. If anybody has a quick, relevant question, and honest, may I ask, please? Yeah, please, something.
Are you sure you have the right source cited in number 15? Because this says, Amai Asal Ishchat B'Yom Tov Kishen Ova Melchassas.
It should be Chelik Beis Tshuva Vav.
Okay.
Okay, anybody by the way who wants to see the Sri Deish, I'm sorry, this is the wrong Sri Deish quoted here. It's Chelik Beis Simin. It's Simin Ches, but it's the wrong, I guess it's a different copy. So it's a Simin Ches in the printed copies, but this is not the right tshuva. So you want to see the Sri Deish, you should. Go to your local Beis Medrash, take out the actual Sefer, and look at Simin Ches there.
Is it Chelik Beis?
It's Chelik Beis, yeah. Okay?